welcome to Stakeout, a bi-weekly podcast bridging the gap between video games, culture, history, and more from the team at Vault Boys WV. Each week, we discuss a video game subject through the lens of what inspired it. My name is Dave Chaffins, and joining me today and every week is Austin O'Connor. Unless there's somebody else, you know. Unless...
You cheating on me?
Shadow Austin.
Are you cheating on me?
I'm talking about Shadow Austin.
No. See, now you just talked yourself into... You backed yourself into a corner.
What if I am? What would you do?
Well, you didn't sign a prenup, so I get half of Vault Boys.
You get half...
Split.
You, which, vault do you boy, get the Vault or vault do you boy. Get the Boys?
No, it's just Vault Boy, Vault Boy.
Vault Boy, but yeah. Just Vault Boy.
Yeah. So join us next week on Vault Boy.
Boy. Singular.
Yeah. No, I am excited for today.
Oh, well, yeah, that's good.
I'm very pumped.
Well, what have you been into this week? What have you been up to?
What have I been into? Went to Morgantown.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Went to the big city.
Big city.
For a concert.
You went to a concert up there, yeah.
Very fun. Mountain stage. It was a good time.
That's good.
Cold. Yeah. It was 3 degrees when I woke up.
What bands did you see up there?
So there was...
You have this like favorite band that you're like all about. All
right, so with Mount, for though anybody that doesn't know, Mountain Stage is a NPR affiliate. Mm-hmm. They stream the concerts over I think 240 different NPR stations across the country, and they bring in like 4 or 5 bands for the show. It's like a 2.5 hour radio show. Mm-hmm. So there was a band called the Brother Brothers, Hush Kids. Elysian Fields, Mandolin Orange, and then I went specifically for Gregory Alan Isakov. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing. It was such a good show. It's the only thing that sucked was like each band could only play like 4 songs.
Yeah, that's split. The problem. That's the problem. Yeah.
Gregory Alan Isakov got to play, he played like maybe 6 or 7 though. They actually brought him back out for an encore, which was cool. But I mean, our seats were like, we were like 7 rows back, so it was good.
Oh, yeah.
It was perfect, and I mean, he's a pretty big time artist now, so it's it was cool to see him that close, and it was fun.
I went to Mountain Stage and saw the Mountain Goats about a year ago, and I want to go again. And it's not like there's anything barring me from going because literally
it's a straight
normally
shot
that happens like a block away. Yeah. It's like maybe a 2-minute walk from from where you are,
and that's
like,
what was so frustrating. And it's my luck is that I had never been to Mountain Stage.
Yeah.
But of course, the one time that my favorite musician is there, they held it in Morgantown rather than literally across the street from my apartment. Like, it just doesn't make, well, not right across the street, but within a few minutes of walking, it's just like, yeah, so I have to drive 2 hours to go see him. It was still fun. But I think they like, I guess what they stream online like several months later, they make it all available to listen to. So that's cool. But yeah, it was neat. I want to go back to Mountain Stage here. I know they have a lot of sold out shows coming up. But.
Right. So that's one thing that we are changing, I think, this week. Last week we came into the podcast and we said, we're not going to talk about West Virginia. We're not going to talk about Fallout. And we got to thinking and it was kind of like, well, you know, those are always kind of like a part of us now. You know, it's
our
like,
brand.
It's like a part of, you know, what makes, you know, we're I would say, fairly knowledgeable of these subjects. And so even in Stakeout that we're doing now, we're still, like, you're still going to get a lot of a similar spiel. Mm-hmm. It's just we're going to be talking about different games. And it's going to be more like, it's going to be a one subject a week. We're not just going to come in here and you know, BS around like we do in the first 10 minutes of every episode of anything.
Even though we sort of are doing it right now.
Even though we are.
talking about Mountain Stage and whatnot.
Right. So we're still, you know, we're still piloting this show out as kind of this separation between our normal core Fallout 76 podcast, Fallout Boys WV, the world-renowned star of Fallout 76-based podcast.
We got to stay true to what we know, though.
That's true.
We have to keep those common themes.
That's true. So it's more about, like, you know, I would say that it's the number one West Virginia-based video game off-topic podcast. I can make us the number
there,
one of
very,
anything.
Very specific niche. Like that's like
Yes.
Several lines there. Of,
right. And it's kind of like, you know, when you just want McDonald's fries and a Coke, but the burger is there too.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, the burger is good in itself, but you know, you don't necessarily, you want the fries and the Coke more, but you know that the combo is just a better deal.
Yeah.
We're that combo.
I'm with that.
We're that combo.
I see what I'm picking up what you're throwing
down.
Yeah. So
Austin, what you been playing this week in the wide world?
I'm still on Fallout. I was late to the party.
You're late to the party. I was real late to the party,
and I'm in that zone now where I've just been trucking
through. Give me a brief update.
I'm like just about at level 40.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I'm good mm-hmm. to go. You and our pal Steven.
Steven
helped me get.
Steven is from London, right?
London, yeah.
And he was joined up with you right after we started allowing the people to play.
He was one of the first people I played with because he caught me at a good time one day, and I guess he was almost home, and I was getting off work early.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, man, you know, I'm going to be on. And so I hopped in there with him, and so we've played several times, and he's kept me up to date with where his wife just delivered, I think, like I said in the last Vault Boys episode, they had their first baby.
Was that Steven?
That was Steven, yeah. They have a little boy.
I should have congratulated him.
They are home, and they're back from the hospital. And so, yeah, so it's another a big congratulations to old Steven.
We're getting all international up
here. You know,
I love
it. It's fun. And
I
was playing the other night, and Steven was on. And you had played with us a little bit that night. It was when you guys helped me get the excavator power armor.
Yeah, yeah.
And we ended up walking down into Watoga. This was after you had logged off.
Yeah.
And this guy came up to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear, Duke? Duke Silver? That's my gamer tag, obviously.
Yeah.
And he goes, Duke, is that you? And I was like, oh, hey, what's up, man? And like, so we get to talk, and he loved Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
So he adds me. So then Steven and I start playing with him and his buddies.
Yeah.
One of his friends was from Canada. One was from, I think, Ireland. Another one, the guy was from Chicago. Like, mm-hmm. So we're like all over the place. And I think that's been my favorite part of Fallout is like run into these
you're
people.
You're like the international ambassador of West Virginia.
So it's just cool to run
the virtual post-apocalyptic West Virginia.
It's cool because, you know, with Call of Duty and stuff, you just got put in a lobby with someone and maybe you become friends or something. Mm-hmm. But it's cool to virtually, in a physical sort of way, you're walking along and run across someone, get to talking, and then you become friends. And I've played with these people several times.
It's natural.
Yeah. It's just like,
it's
oh, hey,
physical,
what's up, man?
But it's natural. Yeah.
It's like you wave to each other, and then you start talking.
Yeah.
And you become friends. And it does take me back to like high school when I used to play Halo and Call of Duty and this stuff. And I did gain friends from that I still talk to today.
Yeah.
But I hadn't had that in so long because, you know, with other games, I would end up just playing. Like,
I ran a small subreddit on called r/Metal Gear Patriots, and it was based around Metal Gear Solid 5's nuclear weapons subgame.
Mm-hmm.
And I made some friends that were from kind of all over the world just doing that. And then it got real big for a month, and then the Konami, who developed Metal Gear Solid 5, they really screwed it up. I mean, they really just royally screwed it up, and the end game was essentially broken so much that the task is that everybody's supposed to disarm all the nukes in the world, the virtual world, and our team was supposed to. We were like the heels of, you know, like in wrestling, and we were making the nukes for the. So it was like a fun like, oh, screw you guys trying to disarm. We're just building nukes over here. And I made some friends doing that, and they were all very nice. But I do think it's ironic that my tastes in like what I consider to take time in are involved around video games devoted to nuclear weapons.
Yeah, there's a common theme here. I think.
Yes, yes.
No,
but it seems like I'm a sucker for that.
That's where I am. I am still all aboard the Fallout train. I just haven't been interested in playing any other games at the moment, just because I'm so dedicated on trying to keep leveling up,
keep on
getting there and finishing quests. So.
I am playing Hitman, which I had you sit down and play a little bit of.
Fun.
You probably have played one of the older ones.
I honestly haven't.
You really haven't?
Yeah, I had always seen it, and I think I almost bought several of them at many points in my life, but I never played them.
From like somebody who doesn't know what it is, Hitman is like you would look at it and you would think, oh, you're a hitman. You're kind of like James Bond-esque, and you're like, you got to go kill these targets. Mm-hmm. But it's more than that. I think it's like one of the best puzzle games. It's
critical thinking.
Well, you gotta like take into account all of this difference. You gotta take into account all these variables. So it's like if I, let's say I want to kill this one person. Well, I find out that there's this person that's blackmailing my target. Mm-hmm. But the person that's blackmailing my target is trying to go and visit the target, but needed a disguise to do that, and so like knocked out a mascot at a racing event and dressed up as the mascot. And so then my job is to steal the mascot uniform, get the phone, tell the target I'm coming. I talk to the target with the blackmail that I stole, and the target's like, okay, let's go out behind the dumpsters and talk. And then it's like,
it's a whole just situation.
Then you whack them in the head with a bat and put them in the dumpster, and nobody sees you, and guess what? You get a lot of points. So it's like, it's like a gigantic, the levels are big, but it's like very specific.
The level I played was crazy, but I enjoyed it. So. Yeah.
But I was reading as my tidbit, as we challenge each other to bring some history into this. What are the things that the developer was inspired by when they were designing it was the classic Connery James Bond film, because You have gadgets when you go in. So you can have like guns and stuff, but there's like you can start with a syringe of poison, or you can start with a rubber duck that you throw and then can remote detonate it into either a lethal explosion or a concussive explosion.
You could be so your choice of if you want to kill someone.
My favorite weapon that you can bring in is a fish. You can just
get a literal fish.
Like you just hit people with a fish. Here's a fish.
Well, I did not know that.
So it's like you got this like silly element to it as well. I mean, you're dressing up as a mascot and then whacking somebody.
That's a typical Thursday afternoon. Right, you know.
there's an element. Can relate. An element to that that's kooky. But I've really been enjoying it. It's interesting because with the second one, they allowed it so that if you own the first one, if you had the levels and stuff, the account recognized it, and so when you bought the second one, you could get updated versions of all of the first one's levels.
That's pretty neat.
So, like, you're building this library of different, and it has all the same challenges, all the same stuff, but it's all in that updated format that they put in for the game. So it's not necessarily like, and there's nothing HD about it, but it's just
a little update.
The streamlined version. Like in the second one, mirrors matter. And so like if you're looking in a mirror, you can use mirrors to your advantage, but other people can as well.
Yeah.
So like you can be hiding behind a corner. If they notice you in a mirror, they're going to be like, something is up here.
That's pretty interesting.
It's an interesting game.
I'll play it eventually, I'm sure.
One of the most interesting things I think about it is they have these things called elusive targets, which are these events. It's like, you know how like Fallout is eventually going to have these events that are going to be, you know, big thing at some point, in the future. In the year 2021. That's an old...
I always think of... In the year 2000.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
In the year
wasn't that Conan?
Conan.
Yeah.
They have like the rings around their neck or whatever.
Oh my gosh. I love Conan is probably my favorite late night.
He's good.
He's my favorite.
I hope we don't get sued for using his song just now.
He'll be fine. He does a podcast now. It's delightful.
He won't hear this.
He won't know. But they have these elusive targets, and every so often it'll be a challenge to kill a target. So in Hitman, they had him in Hitman 1, 2, and it's time. So you only have one chance to do it. If you mess up, it's gone. You can't get him again. So the first one, you had to kill Sean. Now I forgot his name. He was in Lord of the Rings, and he was Ned Stark in Game of Thrones.
I can't remember his name either.
But he dies and everything, and that's like his big
spoiler,
his,
man.
His big meme.
Spoiler.
You know, anything that he's in, he dies in. Well, he was the first target. They got him to actually play the guy in the game. They had another one where you had to kill, oh gosh, it was Gary Busey. That was in the first one where they had Gary Busey come in, and you had a mission where you had to kill him. Then it's not just like movie stars or what have you. It's different targets that they design and do stuff with. But a lot of the promotional material that they have sometimes involves marketing with famous actors, actresses, that kind of stuff. So that's what I've been up to. But Austin, with that, I will take us into our next segment. What's up?
Today, we're talking about something very near and dear to my heart.
How near? Oh.
Real near and dear to my heart. This is my childhood we're talking about.
Okay.
And it is a game that I think shaped a lot of people's childhoods and lives and interests in general. Several games, really. The Tony Hawk Pro Skater series as a whole.
I thought you were going to talk about Mavis Beacon teaches typing.
What?
Mavis Beacon teaches typing? That's what I thought you were going to talk about.
That's next week's episode. We're getting ahead of ourselves. But the Tony Hawk Pro Skater series.
Yes.
So it was something that I don't know anyone, at least in our age group, that doesn't know what it is or has not played it.
Like, I'd say it's a staple of living rooms basements.
It's a staple of, like, I mean, any kid that had a PlayStation 1, even if they didn't own the game, they had the Pizza Hut demo disc. Parappa the Rapper.
Parappa the Rapper.
Like, everyone knew what it was.
Chop the block. Do-do-do-do-do-do.
You remember more of this than I remember.
Oh, Parappa the Rapper was good, but...
So, Tony Hawk Pro Skater is something that, and we'll get back to this later, it influenced a lot of things, more than just video games. So, we'll get back to that later, but I wanted to sort of give more of a background on skateboarding in general first, and lay that out, and then we can transition more into the game's influence and impact.
Right. So, we're taking it
old. So, we're going back
school.
To the origins of skateboarding.
Right.
Which, skateboarding sort of became decently popular in the 50s. It had a quick flash. It kind of died out.
Yeah.
It was short-lived because at the time, people skateboarding, they were using clay wheels on the skateboard. It was really dangerous. You know, it just wasn't a very...
That's kind of crazy.
It wasn't really a stable... It just never... It's like, skateboarding just never really picked up, and it was very basic and...
So they were just like hanging around. They didn't use rubber. They used just
It was just clay wheels. It was not safe. At all. Well, then we're going to take this back over to in the 70s near Venice Beach in Santa Monica, California.
Have you ever been to Venice Beach?
I've never been to California.
So you've never been to California?
Never been to California.
Are you kidding me?
Furthest west I've been is Phoenix.
Oh, man.
So I've never truly been. I mean, like, Phoenix is the west coast technically, but I don't consider it the west coast.
I've been to San Diego and L.A., and Venice Beach is how you picture it. It's just how you picture it.
I always, and I'll get back to this too, growing up playing surfing games and skateboarding games and the music I listened to, I always wanted to just experience a California, like, surf skate town.
You want to watch the OC, you know?
No, I'm good. But
I got Chris Pratt in it, I'll have you know.
Okay, well, fair enough. But
CW, shout out.
So there was an abandoned amusement park between Venice Beach and Santa Monica. And it was called The Cove. And it was sort of this just iconic local spot. Kids would go down to surf, and it was this very, like, it was like a class structured area. Like, you had to build your way up to earn respect and be able to surf there. Like, you couldn't just come in and surf. Like, you had to start at the bottom.
You were the shrimp, and you had to work your way up to the big kahuna.
So they had people, you know, look out. Like, they wanted to make sure, you know, you're looking out and making sure everybody's good or there's nothing in the water or stuff like that.
Right.
Making sure that nobody's rolling up that shouldn't be rolling up, just stuff like that.
Right.
And so as you build up your respect, they would, you know, you were able to surf there.
Your cred.
Yeah.
Not necessarily your street cred, maybe your sand cred.
Yeah, I don't know where we would go with
your wave cred.
So, and you know, it was dangerous to surf there because it's under this pier. Mm-hmm. And you could slam into the pillars, and it could go south really quick. But it was a local spot. And there was a local surf team. There was a shop called Zephyr. So the Zephyr surf team was a big deal there. And there were a lot of local kids on it.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, in the 50s, skateboarding kind of had a rise and fall and died down. These kids still skateboarded some, but it just wasn't this nationally known. Like, it wasn't a big deal. Mm-hmm. And then in 72, I believe, Urethane Wheels were debuted. And if you've ever seen the movie Lords of Dogtown, a lot of this is going to call back to the movie Lords of Dogtown if you've ever seen it. Have you watched Lords of Dogtown?
I actually have never. You said that when we were talking about doing this episode, you gave me a few things, and I ended up watching a few of them, but I didn't get around to watching Lords of Dogtown.
I have it. We'll have to watch it.
So what is that?
So what is Lords of
Dogtown?
Lords
of Dogtown, yeah.
It is a movie, basically everything that I'm about to tell you, it is the more detailed version of it, how everything started. So the Zephyr Skate Shop, Surf and Skate Shop, they get news of these urethane wheels, which is actually what is still used today, is urethane wheels.
Really?
And in the movie, there's this scene where the guy comes in, and I think he's more of like a salesman, and he's trying to pitch. I think it's actually Mitch Hedberg that plays the guy. Remember the comedian Mitch Hedberg? The guy that used to get up on stage with the sunglasses and had the long hair. I could be wrong. I swear I think it's Mitch Hedberg, though.
I don't know. You know a lot more about comedians.
I could be imagining that.
You could be.
I'm not totally sure. Someone could be roasting me right now.
This could be Mandela effect.
So this guy comes in and he's trying and he's telling them about these urethane wheels. And he just keeps saying, they grip, man. Right. They grip.
They grip.
You can ride walls, man. You can surf these streets. Like, you can surf, man, on land. They grip. They grip. And so these kids were just like amazed at what they could now do on a skateboard that they could not do before. And they had this surfing background. And so they sort of, at the time, skateboarding was just sort of there. Like, there weren't necessarily styles the way there are now. Like now there's like vert, and then there's street skating, and there's like all these other things. Then it was just sort of like a freestyle type of thing. It was
right,
and they made it their own, where they had this surfing background, and they would just cruise the streets and basically surf the streets when they couldn't be out on the water. Mm. And so Zephyr,
like how longboarding is kind
of
today.
And they, you know, that they were on a normal little skateboard, but they just found a way to just carve through the streets. And so Zephyr then made sort of a. They made a transition because they realized, oh, skateboarding, this could be good for skateboarding. Right. It could be a resurgence.
It's kind of like how, you know, you start as Vault Boys and then you're like, maybe you
make stakeout.
Maybe you make a little, you can come to a little stakeout.
So the leader, he was a co-owner of Zephyr.
The leader is the Tunnel Snakes.
His name was Skip Engblom, I believe is how you pronounce his name. Yep. And in the movie, he's actually played by Heath Ledger. It's one of my favorite Heath Ledger roles.
Yeah, maybe I remember this. Maybe I've watched this movie with my sister.
He's just like, come on, man. Like, we got to go skate, bro. Like, come on, dude. Like, just smoking, drinking all the time. Mm. I mean, and he's portrayed as an asshole. Like, that's just, pardon my French.
I like his portrayal in A Knight's Tale way better, I already know.
A Knight's Tale's up there, too.
Yeah.
But
Nike check on the armor.
So he... you know, gets these kids going and creates the skate team. And there were three very notable members of the skate team. Mm-hmm. There was Stacy Peralta, Tony Alva, and Jay Adams. And they are the main three characters of Lords of Dogtown because they were sort of the three that were really close. Mm-hmm. And Lords of Dogtown kind of shows how this rise of skateboarding and rise of popularity distanced these three. They all went their own separate route and they took their own form of skateboarding. But so they get this skate team going.
So they're like the pioneers of skate.
They are the real pioneers of it. Right. And there were other kids on the team that had success too, but they were kind of the three biggest ones. Mm-hmm. And so Peralta, Tony Alva, Jay Adams. And they entered the first big skating competition in 1975. Mm-hmm. It was the Del Mar Nationals in California.
That means of the sea in Spanish.
Does it?
Yeah, Del Mar.
Oh, look at that. And most of the country was skating sort of like a downhill, you know, between the cones. What's the name for that? It's like S-L-A-L-O-M, however you pronounce that.
Sloam?
Sloam,
that's
yeah.
what I call it.
Yeah, however you pronounce it. They were skating this more downhill.
Right,
you
through know, the cones. Yeah.
Just through the cones. That was skateboarding.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
there weren't the way it is now with ollies and kickflips and ramps and all this crazy
right.
stuff. And the Zephyr team, or they called themselves the Z-Boys,
mm-hmm.
they go to this competition, and they enter the freestyle competition. And they just blew everybody away because they had this kind of surfing, aggressive, low to the ground, unique style that no one else was doing anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kind of took it by storm. And
from that, were like the showmen of while everybody else was just like,
everyone
oh,
else
I'm
was
gonna...
doing the same stuff.
Right.
And then they just came in and people were like, holy cow, what are they like?
They brought personality to it. Yeah.
yeah. And they were just this like, and in the movie, it shows this competition and it shows. Like, I think one of the guys plays Iron, or not Iron Maiden, he plays Iron Man, Ozzy Osbourne, I'm trying to think of, it's like you hear like the, and he's like coming out on his board and everyone's like looking around because you hear this music playing, and he just comes out and just, I think it was Tony Alva, and he just like shreds and he's just
yeah.
going crazy. And everyone, it's almost sort of, I think at first, like in Back to the Future when Marty McFly plays in front of the, and all the people are
like
what is this?
Yeah.
This is not
mm-hmm.
something we're used to. And so then from that, the Z-Boys all, you know, they get this popularity and they start to rise. Skateboarding kind of just sweeps the nation at this
point. Z-Boys rule.
So the Z-Boys become this big thing. And in particular, Stacy Peralta, he ends up, you know, transitioning into one of the best skateboarders in the world. He's world renowned, very, very successful. And he ends up years later partnering with an aerospace engineer named George Powell, and they create Powell Peralta. And Peralta starts recruiting all these young skateboarders from around the country.
So why did he choose an aerospace engineer? Just so
somebody
could
needed,
look at.
They wanted to design, I believe, their own boards. And
okay,
they wanted
yeah.
this like smooth, whatever's going to be able to...
They wanted
to,
something that was aerodynamic.
Yeah, they wanted something that's going to be able to make to progress skateboarding.
That was a skateboard.
Yeah.
Like,
and so they make this team, and he recruits... And I've talked to you about Rodney Mullen before, and there were mm-hmm. a few other skateboarders, and he calls them the Bones Brigade, which is, in the skateboarding world, that's their legends. Like, they are one of the greatest skateboarding teams ever.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the all-star team. Like
it's
early...
Like the
yeah.
Olympic...
Like, you look back at,
yeah.
like, the Bulls in the 90s, and everyone's like, oh, they were the greatest. Like,
yeah.
this team was just
or the
one
94
of the best.
Olympic team, whatever. The one that
the
had
dream
Michael
team.
Jordan
the
and
dream
Magic Johnson. Yeah, the dream team.
So,
that's it.
So they have this Bones Brigade, and Rodney Mullen today is one of the most highly respected skateboarders in the game, still, I would think. And then Peralta discovered this young kid from San Diego
yeah.
named Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
You might have heard of him. I don't know.
I haven't had it. Not once.
And so it took a... I think Tony, in interviews I've heard... you know, he just was just this kid from San Diego and he never mm-hmm. expected that skateboarding would sort of take off the way it did for him. But so Peralta sort of started to mentor Tony as
mm-hmm.
when he was young and Tony.
So this was during the 80s.
This was in
70s
yeah,
and 80s.
Like I think maybe late 70s going into the 80s.
Yeah.
And then Tony sort of followed in Peralta's path and Tony Hawk becomes this, you know, pretty well-recognized skateboarder at competitions, and he becomes one of the best in the world. And then Tony sort of emulated Peralta in creating his own brand, which was called Birdhouse in the early 90s.
Right.
But
and I remember watching an interview with him talking
yeah.
about how hard that was.
Right.
And how he had, like, he was just starting his family and this business at the
yeah.
same time. And he was like, I ate peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for, like, months.
Yeah, and, like, ramen. And, like,
yeah,
he had
yeah.
a kid at this point, I think,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
And he's just, at that point in the early 90s, I think skateboarding had sort of started to decline again. And these people were performing in, you know, like, they were doing stuff in, like, parking lots for, like, small events for, like, $100 a show, like... It was just not a super livable income for a lot of
right.
people. And then, you know, these different skateboarding, it seems like it's always been a roller coaster. And that was a down point again. And it sort of starts this flux back up.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tony Hawk, you know, as the 90s progresses, he gets a deal with a video game company to create his own video game.
Right. And it kind of started, really his popularity started with the X Games.
Yeah, the X Games, and that's the thing, with the X Games and with, you know, major networks picking up skateboarding to show people around the country and around
people
the world.
People started getting a taste of, like, look at these people
flying off
skateboarding and doing all this stuff. And people were like, I mean, for people in L.A. or New York or wherever, that was probably nothing. But for, I mean, you know, Bluefield, West Virginia, people were like, what is this?
Oh, man, yeah. And so then, I mean, from the time it started with the video game for Tony Hawk with, I believe it was Activision, right?
No, it was Nerversoft.
Didn't he do it? Was it not Activision?
I mean, they were bought by Activision.
That's where I'm thinking of that.
They ended up getting Neversoft. Bought in a few, like, I think they were maybe a part of it at some point. There was some point where they worked into it.
Right.
I don't have that exact date out here. But I do know that in 1994, that's when they started off.
Yeah.
And their first game was Skeleton Warriors, which was on the Sega Saturn. Mm-hmm. And then in 1998, they created a shooting game called Apocalypse.
Yeah.
That starred Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis in a video game.
And so they used the similar engine for that. So when Tony Hawk came to sit down and play the game, he played a game where he was skating around a apocalyptic wasteland as Bruce Willis.
That's a fun fact.
Yeah, that I is like a that. Fun fact.
But so the series overall, I mean, there's been several installments. There's been, you know, spinoff games, sort of mobile games, everything. Mm. It looks, from what I could see today, it's amassed over $1.4 billion. It's not bad.
That's not bad. No,
not bad at all.
Well, it's like, I mean, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3, which is considered the pinnacle of the series, is still in the top 10 games of all time.
Yeah, I could pick up any of these games, even though the graphics are so just dated now, and I could still sit for hours and have fun.
Yeah,
and I mean, they're just, it's nostalgic. Mm. But you look at Tony, and I mean, he has like true ties to the origins of skateboarding.
Right.
It's not like he's just a famous skateboarder that now has a game. Like he
has like a traceable.
His mentor
line.
Is one of the OGs of skateboarding.
Right.
Like, and I would consider Tony an OG too, just because of how much he's done. But like he came from a situation where he got to study under one of the first ever like true professional skateboarders. Mm. So that's. And I've heard him say in interviews, he was like, I wanted to emulate what Stacy Peralta did. And he was like, I wanted to build this brand that would maintain and last. And I mean, Stacy Peralta is still, I mean, one of the most highly respected people in skateboarding. I mean, he was even in some of the Tony Hawk games. Like, that was a thing. And it's just cool to see, like, I mean, I guess Tony Hawk, really, if you think about it, he's maintained this brand successfully for roughly like 30 years now, if you think about it. I mean, going from in the late 80s now, I mean,
he has been the number one name in skating for at the very least 20 years.
Yeah.
At this point in skating, because skating isn't really about competition anymore. Yeah. Like, there is still skating competition, of course, but it's more about YouTube and Twitter, and like you can go and make whatever you want, and then if it's good, people watch it. He talks about that in the difference between his like son's success, because his son started skating and is a professional skater. You can play as a child version of him in Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3. Went off and just does his own stuff and just makes, he's like, I want to do this video where I skate off this one thing.
Yeah.
And he goes and does it and it gets like a million
gets
views.
Hits, and then he's got a following.
Right.
That's sort of.
So you don't have to
cool.
like work your way up anymore.
Yeah,
if you can do something.
Viral,
yes.
You can get sponsorships and everything, but it's just, and then, you know, when we were growing up, when we were in middle school, high school, and it still happens today, but you started to see this rise of more just skate videos of just street skating and people put together a cool line of, you know, just different tricks down this one street, just hit this rail, pop off of this ledge, back onto this rail. Like, they would just put a line together, have somebody following them with a camera, goes on a DVD, you know, they're sponsored by this company, they're making mm-hmm. money off of this. And rather than, you know, and they would still go to competitions, but it just became this thing. I remember going to the skate shop in Bluefield and looking through the skate videos and buying new skate videos just
so
to watch.
Because I know that you skated. How did that come about?
So when I was little, I had the PlayStation games, and then I had every Tony Hawk game. Until like American, whatever. What was the last? Like it was an American Wasteland.
In my opinion, American Wasteland was the last good Tony Hawk game. There was Proving Grounds. There was Project 8. There was Tony Hawk's Flippity Gibbet in a basket or whatever.
Like there was the underground ones, and there were all those. And I had Project 8.
There's Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1-4, Thug 1-2, American Wasteland, Project 8, and Proving Grounds.
I think I didn't get Proving Grounds. I think Project 8. Whatever one was before Proving Grounds, I think was the last
Project
one I had.
Project 8,
But that was sort of when I had a dip in video games.
Excuse me, I forgot about Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5.
I did not have that one either.
Well, that didn't come out till 2 or 3 years ago, and now you can still buy it online, but they've completely shut down the servers, and it's an always online game, so you can't even play it. It's just a menu.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
They put it out. So one of the interesting things is that Activision owned the license for Tony Hawk because they bought Nervosoft, and they were about to lose it. And so what did they do? They tasked a team, and they were like, we need to make a Tony Hawk game before we lose it, and they just rushed it.
True.
And then it came out, and people were excited, and then it didn't work. And they were like, well, there's our money grab.
I would love a new Tony Hawk game that incorporated like the skate feature, like the way that their design was with the joystick. And just because I think when skate came around, it made Tony Hawk Pro Skater and those games, it just made them seem so dated with just like the button pressing, when you could have a more like fluid, like you pop an ollie by like flicking the joystick like down and up real quick. Mm-hmm. It just felt so much more real to do that, and you could just feel
like skateboard mechanics.
Yeah,
maybe they did a better job with.
Yeah, but Tony Hawk. So I had the games growing up, and I played them like crazy, and then it just sparked this interest for me around the time I was in elementary school, middle school, because the first thing that happened was I started to really like the music and just like punk rock music and alternative music and the stuff I heard in it. So, you know, I started listening to more just like pop punk, and then I started getting into like Blink-182, and that was weird. I'm going back to my
reverting.
We're getting real into it. So like Blink-182 and like just Green Day was big at the time, and like Less Than Jake and all these like Warped Tour bands that were big. And then it sort of progressed into, I was like, man, you know what? Maybe I should actually try to skateboard. And I was terrible. Yeah. I was so bad. I was so bad. When I first started skateboarding, I was terrible. And then this is sort of one of the influences, I think, of Tony Hawk Pro Skater, how it did make skateboarding more mainstream. You started seeing these other skateboarders get attention and become more famous. Mm-hmm. And then Bam Margera became this big star on MTV because he had Jackass.
He became not necessarily a skater. He was a skater that became a cultural icon.
Yeah, but he had the skateboarding background, and that was a common theme in his show.
Right.
When he had Viva La Bam.
Right, because skating and punk music kind of like had this like cultural melting pot where it became a spectrum.
Yeah, and so I started watching Viva La Bam just religiously. And he was
Selena used to watch, what was it, Bam's Unholy Union?
Yeah, I never really got into that. That was later.
Liked that.
But Viva La Bam, he was sponsored by Element. Yeah. So I had to buy an Element board. He, just everything he did, he had like the Element, like the beanie that had the little like hat brim at the end of it.
Yeah.
I had one of those.
Oh, yeah.
I grew my hair out. I was constantly watching videos of him on YouTube. This was like right when YouTube started, I guess. I was looking up Bam Margera skate videos and highlight videos and buying the Element videos. And I started skating more, and I got better. And it just sort of turned into, from me playing this game as a kid and just thinking it was the coolest thing ever and not knowing hardly anything about skateboarding, but just being so just entranced by it, it turned into, okay, now I like this music. I like this lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I'm genuinely interested in this. And with my friends in Bluefield that we skated together, it was like the same story. Like everyone seemed to progress along the same route of, I started with the game, I liked the music, I watched these TV shows and these, you know, skate videos and all this stuff. And it just became a thing. Like we all would just, they were, a lot of them lived in my neighborhood and we would just skate around. We would buy little ramps and stuff and set up. And then we would start going to the skate park, and I was never like super good, but I was able to do like ollies and kick flips and grind rails and stuff. If I tried to do that now, I would probably break my arm. But
well, that's the, when I started skating very late, and I did it. It's like in college, I'm gonna get around, so I borrowed a penny board.
I have a penny board that
from
was
my buddy Nick Thompson, who said he didn't want his, and I was like, well,
oh, yeah, Nick bought his because I bought mine, I think.
Yep,
I remember
that's probably
that.
Why.
Yeah.
And I borrowed it from him, and I was like, all right, I'm going to get my buddy Walter to teach me how to do the skateboard. And he was like, all right, all you got to do, get on it and just push off because you'll have more balance once you move it. I was like, okay. And I pushed off, and then the board went, and then I didn't go.
You did not go.
And then it was like the centripetal force, and then I ended up spraining my wrist. And I
was that like, the extent of your skateboarding
that's
career?
That's the extent of my skateboarding career. But the music in those games was very inspirational for me and what I ended up liking and getting into when I was a kid. And kind of when you hear, like, it kind of was a resurgence of ska music.
Dude, ska music is such, like, I mean, I listen to it now mostly ironically. Like, it's just funny to listen to it.
I don't know if I listen to it ironically anymore. I think maybe, like, 5 or 6 years ago I could, but now I just listen to it.
I still can't get into it. And, like, I had a point in time, like a point, there was a point in time where I really did, but I think there was, and this is a long story short, one of my friends introduced me to a Christian ska band a few years ago.
You're talking about Five Iron Frenzy?
I don't think that's who that is. Okay. This band was like, they have a song called Mission Trip to Mexico, and they're just talking about a mission trip, and it's all ska, and it's like the pick it up, like just like, upbeat, going, same theme, but it's talking about like Jesus and stuff, and it just ruined ska music for me. I couldn't ever hear a Goldfinger song without thinking about this band. But I was able to see, and I guess Less Than Jake is mostly ska. They're like punk and ska.
Yeah, I think ska is interesting music because it kind of took like this. It's kind of an offshoot of punk because punk is more like a postmodern feel where it's like life sucks. Like, and ska was more of like this, it was upbeat and it was happy, but it still
was talking about this.
Was thing. Talking about like, yeah, life does suck. Like, but we make the choice.
Right.
Like, we are in control. It's almost like this like postmodern.
Yeah,
like kind of music, well, which is kind of out of its time, really. Yeah.
Seeing a ska band live is fun. I will say that I've enjoyed.
Who did you see live?
Less Than Jake.
Okay.
Yeah, at Warped Tour years ago.
Back at the Warped Tour.
God, Warped Tour was an experience.
Mm.
But it was kind of fun because it was just like all of these bands that were, you know, Tony Hawk soundtracks. Like it was like these people. I don't know. And then there's Motorhead and Ace of Spades. That song, anytime I hear it, I can only think of Tony Hawk Pro Skater.
I think of that. And what's that?
I think of CKY 96 Quite Bitter Beings.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And well, that was Bam Margera's brother. I think his name's Jesse Margera was one of the members in that band. Yeah.
It's like the Cyrus family. They're freaking
well, that's why Bam always had CKY stuff on. Was his that, and he loved that band.
Yeah.
But
I'm trying to think of oh gosh, I've forgotten it. Never mind.
But it's just skateboarding really did become, I mean, I was skateboarding every day. I mean, every day. Cold, warm, whatever. And there was like, I got really into World Skateboarding Day every year. We would go to the skate park and actually got interviewed 1 year there. And
so
like
the skate park was in Princeton.
Princeton,
right?
Yeah. So it was like, at the time that felt so far away because I couldn't drive. I was like 14 and it was at the rec center there.
Yeah.
And I had to like earn, I had to earn my spot there because the first time I ever went was before I was really actually any good at skateboarding and I just busted my ass in front of everybody. And I hit my, I like fell so hard I lost my breath. So I'm just laying here like, like can't breathe. And it, my dad was there with me. I was like 12 at this time.
What did
time.
They call the kid in Rocket Power? Was it a squib?
Oh, yeah. Oh. I started as that. You know what I mean? Like I felt like I had like sandals and jeans on or something. But
yeah.
So I didn't go back to the skate park for like 2 years after that. I was too traumatized and I needed to work on. So I was going down a ramp and just ate it. And then a few years later was when I really got into it. Mm-hmm. And then like in college, it progressed into, I had a longboard and then longboards were just like, there were so many people with them. I hated riding mine.
Yeah. That was the crazy. That was like I remember cause we experienced a very similar freshman year. There were things that were cool for just that year.
Yeah. And then it was like, all right, man, come on, give it up. Like you couldn't
like stuff that just lasted, yeah. Like that had such a short lifespan.
That's why I like the penny board. Cause I was like one of the first people at Marshall that had the penny board.
Well, the penny board makes sense.
Yeah. You could put it in your backpack. It was just logistically better.
That was what I thought. And it was like, okay, I can use this and it's probably faster than me taking the bus and waiting at the bus stop, especially if I have something going on. So I can just learn to ride this penny board. And
it's a lot easier said than done. When you get on it, those things are tricky. Even for me, when I'd skateboarded for years, it took a little bit of time to get used to it because your center of gravity and like your balance and everything is so much different because your feet are so much closer together.
Right.
On a skateboard, you could get in like a set stance and you had, you know, kind of your balance and everything. But penny board is tricky. Mm. And my thing with a skateboard was I always stopped by kind of popping the back down and letting it drag the ground. Kind of like a manual, but I would just let it drag. Mm-hmm. Can't do that on a penny board because the back curves up. So you have to go so much further back. So it was just like, well, I didn't ride it that much. And Marshall's campus was so crowded when I was going to class. It was honestly more of a hassle.
Right.
So I would just ride it at night or whatever. But it's just funny, like it transitioned into that. And I haven't ridden a skateboard probably in a couple years now. Mm. But I'm itching to like get back into
my first time is my last time.
I love skateboarding. I still love skateboarding, and I mean, I still will go back and watch. Like I told you, Lords of Dogtown is in my top 10 of maybe not cinematically like, oh, it's the best movie ever made. Just favorite movies. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorites, just because it's just like this gritty like 1970s Venice Beach. You know what I mean? Just kind of like skater feel. And the acting is really good. It has, like I said, Heath Ledger. It has, what's his name? The kid that was in Into the Wild. Emil Hirsch. Is that his name? Emil Hirsch, I think.
I think so.
He was in that. And it's got him. And I think he was in Lone Survivor or something like that.
I think so, yeah.
And there's a few other, like Johnny Knoxville's in it, I think, for a little bit. There's a lot of recognizable people, but It's just crazy that skateboarding, you know, it's died and had a resurgence so many times.
Yeah.
But really since Tony Hawk, I feel like it's just been on the up and up. Like it's been relevant since we were kids at this point.
I think it's been relevant for teenagers for years and years.
Well, it spawned Bam Margera, and then Rob Dyrdek had his own thing. And you know, it's just given these people more of a platform to be personalities and to form their own brands from it, regardless of now Rob Dyrdek does, you know, like Ridiculousness, and he has his own kind of thing that he does. And Bam Margera had his shows, and he is now Bam. I think after the Ryan Dunn thing, when Ryan Dunn died, it like he sort of went out of the spotlight, but he there for a long time had, you know, Jackass, Viva La Bam, the Bam's Unholy Union,
right.
Skate videos. I mean, like
he needs more of a Jack Black art.
Yeah.
Jack Black still got it.
What's crazy is Bam performed in Huntington at the V Club a few years ago.
Really?
He had like this side project kind of music thing he was doing.
Yeah.
And I didn't go, and I have kicked myself since because I like this dude. When I was a kid, when I was like 12 in middle school,
right?
I wanted to be Bam Margera. Like he was the coolest guy, and I still have respect for him because I still think that like what he did and the way that he took skateboarding and made this into this whole brand in that way. Because look at Tony Hawk with his brand. It was skateboarding. Like Bam turned this into a whole like just overall brand of I'm going to do whatever I want on these shows and make it just like there's going to be a little bit of skateboarding, but I'm just going to do whatever I want.
Yeah, I think that like And I don't know if that's necessarily if Bam was good or bad for skating.
Right.
Like, for the culture, obviously he mm-hmm. pushed skating, but like I went back
mm-hmm.
and I was remembering not only just playing Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1. I played that when I had it on the Nintendo 64, and then again, freshman year of college, my buddy had a Nintendo 64 in my suite in whatever dorm we were in, and we would sit around till 2 a.m. playing like old Tony Hawk,
yeah.
Which if you'd played the other ones, it ran like crap. I mean, yeah. it was like walking for the first time trying to play that game.
Right.
And I played a ton of Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3, and that had Darth Maul in it.
I remember you could
be Darth Maul. And I think it was the first level in it was the foundry.
Mm-hmm.
It had the cruise ship,
mm-hmm.
airport.
The airport
was a big level, stuff. And just like the idea behind this game that it became a game not necessarily about doing the tricks, because you could just press a button and do the trick. It became, what could you do the trick off of?
Right. And like, what can you combo with
it? Okay, I know I'm on this half pipe, but I want to go over to this railing in the same combo.
Yeah.
How can I do that?
It was, yeah, people just kind of, you
can. And then I realized why, like, just reviewing it and thinking about it, I went back and played American Wasteland.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in my opinion, it followed after Thug 2, which a lot of people like Thug 2 because it was centered around Bam Margera, but it was way more like kooky, weird kind of
challenges and stuff you needed to do.
Well, it was like silliness. Yeah. And it wasn't even like challenges. It was like poop jokes and like,
oh, it was very vulgar.
Sasquatch, like, yeah. And like,
but the thing, yeah, I loved that one. But I think it was because of Bam, because that was at a point in my life where,
yeah,
I was religious with Bam. Yeah.
And then American Wasteland took the narrative elements that you had in Thug and Thug 2 and parsed it down into, you just like were exploring districts of LA and building the skate park.
Right.
And all the levels and stuff were just in LA. And then it made me realize that, like, the reason, that Tony Hawk Pro Skater translated so well is it was about creativity and environments. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think, you know, skaters, when you go to a skate park, it's like a canvas. Like, you're just essentially an artist. You're like, what can I accomplish?
Right.
What can I do? I bet I can go over there and do a kickflip off of this mm-hmm. off of this ramp, and maybe I can like jump up on this rail and grind for a little bit, or
yeah.
maybe I can roll that into something else. And it became not necessarily about just like, it became more about the creativity of movement.
Yeah.
Almost in like this platforming-esque manner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it struck the same itch of Super Mario 64.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Super Mario 64, you're thinking, how do I get to that star? Well, I can jump on this platform and then backflip off mm-hmm. of it, hit on a branch, climb up, jump up again,
mm-hmm.
get to it.
Oh, yeah, it was definitely one of those things where, I mean, just you had to be original with what you wanted.
Yeah, it was about, like, in the environment. And that's why I think American Wasteland was so good, is because it took L.A. And mm-hmm. it was like, what can you trick off of in L.A.?
Yeah.
You go to Beverly Hills, are you going to be, like, tricking between rooftops? Like, are you going to go down, like, tricking off stuff in the Chinese Theater
mm-hmm.
down there in the main on Hollywood Boulevard or whatever they call it? Like, I mean, there was these options, and you could trick in between areas. So you mm-hmm. could trick, you could land a combo in Hollywood to Beverly Hills to mm-hmm. like the dump where the skate park was.
Yeah.
It was more about using that environment. And that probably influenced people all over the world. And so I started looking up videos on the Olympic Channel, because that's mm-hmm. what, I'm a big Olympics fan. My wife is a big Olympics fan. My mm-hmm. wife went to the Atlanta Olympics when she was a kid.
Oh, wow.
Like, her family took her there. But that, for some reason, interests me, because 2020 in Tokyo is the first time that they are having skateboarding mm-hmm. as an event. There.
And I have a feeling that is going to be another one of those things similar to the X Games that is going to propel skateboarding further up.
I feel like that's the case too, because that's what it did. I mean, that's what did it for the Winter Games. Yeah. Like, everybody wanted to see what Shaun is Shaun White going to do next? What is he going to do when he gets on a skateboard?
Snowboarding. I didn't realize how big snowboarding was.
Snowboarding made the Winter Olympics relevant for young people, and the Olympics have to appeal to young people.
It's going to get the viewership up, and it's going to be another thing where I think that these kids are going to come out of nowhere. There's going to be certain skateboarders that are probably decently famous, especially in the skating community, but the X Games, the Olympics, there's not a higher platform. They're going to be like world renowned from the Olympics. Someone is going to do something just so cool.
I think there is something, and I was watching videos on like how like skating has come along in Japan specifically, and it was talking about this group called the Osaka Daggers. And they were essentially this group of friends that were part of a punk scene, and they owned this like punk clothing store. And then once skating got popular in the area, they started skating. But they did it different from everybody else. And their whole thing was, you know, in the streets during the day, they can't skate because it's too crowded. And so at night, they could skate, but they couldn't skate anywhere that was flat because it was like, you know, there's a lot of rules and laws, and you can't do that out in public because it's all very organized. I mean, a lot of the cities in Japan. And so they would have to go to these places that it was like almost impossible to skate. So these guys are skating on dirt. Like, they are specifically designing tricks to skate on dirt, to go on this like cobblestone road and skate. Stuff that, like, they would bring like popular skaters from America over and be like, oh, this is where our popular spot where they trick off that. And they're like, yeah, man, put some gravel down here or put some not gravel, put some cement down here, and it'll be nice and smooth and it'll look great and you can do some stuff off that. But to them, the challenge is using the environment that's already there. And it got me thinking, it was like, you know, that relates to Tony Hawk. Like these games that came out, like, it's about like, I'm going to crash through the window and come down here. And I was watching these tricks that these guys were doing, and they would like run up on this ramp like that was too tall to get up. And they would get to the top, hold the skateboard with the tips of their toes, and do like two or three push-ups, and then roll the skateboard back down. Like, it was a different kind of street skating, almost.
That's the thing about skateboarding is, the origins of it, it was just straightforward, and then people started realizing, man, we can do whatever we want with this. And tricks today are still being invented, people doing things, and that's what's so cool about it. And Rodney Mullen, and I don't know, have you watched the TED Talk that he did?
Yes,
I think I brought it up.
I
he
did.
Talked about how at a point he was like the best freestyle skater in the world. Like, he was up there, and then all of a sudden these people start developing new forms of skateboarding, and he was like, oh, well, like what I do is obsolete now. Like, there's no point. And so he had to adjust and kind of hone his skills and learn street skating. But he took his freestyle skating and incorporated it with street skating. And then that was another revolutionary thing. It was like, we can do both. Like, and he does, you know, like Casper slides and all this crazy stuff, like with the board flip sideways or upside down and stuff. And so you just see a constant progression. But like, even things that people are doing now are directly influenced from things they were doing during the original, you know, days of skateboarding. It was just, it's just now there's a mixture of like different eras all in, you know, like one line that they're doing. So it's cool that, and Tony Hawk, I mean, all these tricks, that's where I think most kids learned what these tricks were from
this game, and learn to see, you know, this new generation learned to see these levels as this like canvas that they could do stuff off of, so that when they are in their street in Bluefield, West Virginia, they're thinking about, oh, I can go over here and trick off this. Like, it's not as easy as, like, you know, skate parks. There's a lot of freedom of movement, but especially for people that don't have access to that. And that's one of the things I think Tony Hawk is now working on, is building skate parks and trying to involve communities in skating. But for people who weren't with it, who didn't, like, know where to go, it was like, this is a way. It was like, you can skate without having a park.
Well, our park in Princeton, it was at a rec center, and it was what you would expect. Like, it wasn't ridiculously impressive, but we didn't have the transportation all the time to get over there when we were kids, so we just sort of did what we could. We built ramps. We would find old rails that maybe had been thrown out or were just not being used, and we would put together these little kind of lines, and a lot of injuries. A lot of injuries. I've got a scar.
And you were almost like the way you were designing and building it was kind of like how you would design those 2 minute runs.
Yeah. Exactly. Like Tony Hawk, we were making it real, and
because you wanted to watch your friends do it, and that's how we would play Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
Is we would play horse, and then it would be like, all right, man, your turn.
We would
you
do,
go
that.
Do
we
that.
We would play horse out there, and it became, I mean. I can't tell you how many times I fell. I've bled all over the place in Bluefield from skateboarding. And I used to ride down the street near mine and just see how long I could do a manual. Because it was like, it was sort of at a little bit of a slant. And I would just get up to the very top and just ride a manual. And if I started going a little too fast, I would kind of pull back further and slow myself down.
Right.
And drag
put it. A little more friction.
And then. And that, you know, just little things like that. Like, we would have to find a way where we didn't have the street, like the urban environment for, you know, rails and ledges. We were just in the suburbs, but we had to find a way to do that. And that was sort of another thing of just make whatever, you just kind of make your environment
when you have
what
some,
you want
I think
it to be.
Some beautiful things happen when you have specific rules and limitations because I think when people have those.
Yeah.
Like, people are doing more creative things.
Yeah,
like, these guys in Osaka that are, like, doing manuals on dirt paths and stuff and trying to, like, do push-ups and ride two skateboards at the same time. And
I mean, we just had to be creative with what limited stuff we had.
Yes.
And it made us, you know, we learned how to build a ramp. Like, we warped wood and hammered all this together, and we got wax so that we could put it on the rail and grind the rail and...
I don't think that there's another video game that made it, that made a sport as popular as it is.
Yeah,
the only thing that I could think that if we could ever strap rockets to cars, Rocket League would have a very similar feel.
Yes, no, I agree.
if we could ever do that.
With skateboarding, I look back and it influenced me wanting to skateboard. And when I look at my years skateboarding with other kids in Bluefield and like the friendships I made and just... The summers spent out because most of the, you know, we would just ride the streets and listen to music and just kind of kick it. Like, it wasn't really, you know, like, we didn't, this was before any of us had to get jobs.
Right.
And it, like, those are some of my favorite memories. And what's funny is, I don't know, had I not played these games, would I have still wanted to skateboard? Like, probably not. I mean, I wouldn't have been influenced because in the games...
Would the punk scene be as prevalent as it is?
Would it be as main... Because it got mainstream there for a while.
Would you have... Not only the punk scene, would you have the emo scene? Like, would you have people listening to My Chemical Romance? Like, would you have whatever... Would you have Panic at the Disco? Like, would you...
Other bands were influenced from these bands that were made more mainstream by this game. This game set... influences across the board in so many ways.
You wouldn't have Green Day as popular as they are.
And it's like, Green Day was really big in the 90s, but like then I feel like they just continued, like just the punk rock music in general continued. But then like in the game, you know, they had like Etnies and DC and all these other Element. And
well, I mean, it connected people to
Spitfire
brands. It connected people to... Because skating was a sport. And that's why I think it's so great for the Olympics, because skating is not really about... It's not really about like having competitors. It's about going out and doing your best and being creative.
Doing something that's going to make people go, "Oh my god, that was cool!"
Right.
Like, who can make who can wow the crowd the
and
most?
And using the world around you to do all that,
and just being able to just—it's cool. It's just—it's one of those things that this game, like I said, across the board has influenced just countless things and. Would a lot of things in pop culture be the same without it? And that's something I don't think a lot of people think about, is that this game, a lot of people's favorite things and favorite music. And
there was movements in big cities like New York and DC and LA, but this game brought it to everyone else.
This game brought it to West Virginia. To like Wyoming, like random, like Michigan, like states where you didn't, like skateboarding wasn't going to be big.
Right.
If you're not near the coast in the early days, like
if you're
it's
not living in
not,
a big city, like you're not going to know what it is.
If you're not in a big city on the coast, a surfer, something, you're probably not going to care. So it's, that's the thing. Like, this game really did just span across everything. And it's, I think it has to be one of the most influential pieces of any sort of media. Ever. And that's like a very, very big statement. But when you think about it, I mean, I don't know many things that are as important as this in our generation, at least.
So there's a few fun facts here from the developers. They released all of the Tony Hawk games that mm-hmm. NerverSoft worked on, every single one but Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5. They were the developers through and through. Right before they released Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1, they released the PlayStation Spider-Man game, which I played.
That
and
was
I thought,
a good one.
I thought it was the coolest.
Oh, God, yeah. Thing. You couldn't even, like, you if you fell out of the sky, like, it was just like you had... You couldn't go on the ground. You were just on rooftops the whole time.
Oh, yeah. And there was, like, this fog. But they made it so that, like, the whole game, there was, like, a toxic spill, yeah. like, in the city. And so that's why you couldn't see the streets and you couldn't see this or that. But when I was a kid, oh, my gosh. I love that game. You could get all kinds of different suits, yes. like, if you did, like, found certain secrets and stuff. Yeah. And it was the first video game to have, like, Stan Lee make a cameo in a Marvel yeah. game. He did the beginning announcing.
Who was the guy? He's in like all those like horror movies. Like he's like what's his name? The guy that did a lot of the
He did all of the stuff in like the movie adaptations of Spider-Man. He was the
yeah.
And then he was in Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3.
Was he the one though that he's been in like the weird cult horror movies yes. and stuff? Like yeah, I can't
Bruce
remember
something.
Yeah. But his voice is just, when I hear his voice, I think of Spider-Man 1.
Yeah.
Every time. I just mm-hmm. think of that, and yeah, that game was cool.
Yeah. The they went on, after they did the different Tony Hawk Pro Skaters, to do a bunch of Guitar Hero games. So they did Guitar Hero 3, mm-hmm. Guitar Hero Legends of Rock, Guitar Hero AC/DC, essentially all the Guitar Hero games from mm-hmm. after 2. I think... oh, gosh, I forgot the name of the developer that did the first two. Rhythm game company. They're still popular. They did Amplitude. They've done, yeah. I think they ended up doing, I think they're the developers for Rock Band. That's where they yeah. went on from there. But they went on to do a bunch of those. They also, immediately after finishing American Wasteland, they created a game called Gun.
Gun. I remember that.
It was the spiritual successor to Red Dead Revolver in an open world. And so it was what inspired then Red Dead Redemption
yeah.
and Red Dead Redemption 2. I played it on the PC, and I thought it was like the coolest thing ever, because it was like, oh my gosh, they took Red Dead Revolver and made it open
they
world.
Just made it open world. Like, this yeah. is so innovative.
The last game that the company developed was a port of Call of Duty Ghosts. And then they got shut down.
Mm. R.I.P. in peace.
R.I.P. in peace. Exactly. So for our final segment, which I have finally decided on what our final segment is we are going to take whichever subject, whatever game we talked about, and relate it in some way to our core Fallout 76. And Austin, as you know, mm-hmm. what do I like to do in Fallout 76?
You definitely like to drink alcohol and eat people, but I don't know if that's what we're going for here.
I mean, not necessarily relative. That may be in the Bam Margera, like you know, yeah. Cultural.
You like to build things.
I like to build things, but I also like to jump on top of stuff.
That's true. You do. I remember
so
last night.
The other night, I was sitting on top of the Squat and Gob, which, yeah. as you all are very familiar, there's a ramp that comes off the sign. So I was like, okay, if I jump up this ramp, and then I can land on this, like, beam that goes
near
the train
station. I was doing that, too. I was trying.
And then I got up there, and I was like, okay, I can jump onto the roof of the train station. And then if I run out of right, I can jump from the train station onto this other beam over there. And I got to thinking about it, and I was like, this is what I liked about Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
Like, if I can... If I can do like a trick off this, a trick off that, and maybe I can get enough momentum with special to get all the way up on top of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're, it's like this weird like platforming thing. It's the same thing with Mario, like I was talking. It's like, you know, Fallout has turned into this Mario simulator for me. Although the other night I got back on and I tried to do that whole thing again. Mm-hmm. And I got on top of the high school finally, and I like jumped from the roof onto the pipe, back up onto another pipe, and then got to the roof, and it was cool. I found, like, there was a power armor suit up there, and I was like, oh my gosh, all this stuff. And then I went to the back end of it. Guess what?
What?
There were stairs.
You could have just, yeah.
I could have just...
All I know is I was somewhere else, and I just kept hearing you go, all right, fuck it, here. Okay. Here. Got it. Okay. All right. So if I just go, and I'm like, what are you doing? And you're just like, oh, I'm just jumping. Like, it was just, I'm just trying to jump. I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Yeah,
so,
same.
So Tony Hawk lives on in my marsupial mutation.
Looking at common themes, I agree. I think that that is definitely a common theme.
So that's going to be the segment each week, because I'm going to, or you are going to, or we are going to relate in some realm, whatever we're talking about.
I just picture, like, next time I come over to do the podcast and you're, like, on your roof, like, jumping onto your neighbor's roof. Like, all right, if I can just jump, if I can
just, like... Eventually, I'm going to get to the top of Watoga. That's going to happen.
Okay.
I'm going to get on top of the world.
Hardcore parkour. All right. I'm going to jump down here, backflip, gainer into the trash can.
Into the trash
can. Hardcore parkour.
All right. Austin, we want to thank you for listening to the show today. Follow the podcast on social media at Stakeout Podcast. Actually, you know what? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to have two separate social medias for this. I wrote this outro earlier. We're just going to do it all through
Vault. You heard it here first, folks.
One other thing is the artwork is being done by a listener of Vault Boys, who's a photographer, graphic designer, and has been doing custom art for the shows. And this week we have a piece, so check it out. It's a guy named Kevin Hollick. I think I'm saying that right. He's on Twitter. I'll link it on there. You can see the picture, but each episode is going to have its own custom photography or artwork or something like that. Just something different we're doing, trying to involve some creative people. His stuff is great.
He's very talented.
The cover art, like, for Stakeout is done by him. I sent him back in, like, and if this is any consolation, since like October of last year, I've been thinking about this, and I was like, hey, I don't know if you're interested in this, but here you go. Here's like, this is the idea I had. And then he went and did it. And I was like, well, okay, so shout out to him. Check him out at Kevin Hollick. And that's all. You can find that on my Twitter, Instagram. He'll be linked on there. You can follow me, Dave, I guess that's my name, at CHAFFINZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZZ things.
It's just a lot.
It's a lot.
Or you can follow me at @OConnor_93. @OConnor_93.
Not Duke Silver 93.
Duke lives on in the PlayStation world.
Duke is the alternate person. It's your WWE personality. Don't forget to check out our other podcast, Vault Boys WV, which you're listening to us now. It's probably the episode right below it. You can probably go down there. It's probably Raiders right below it, where we talk a little bit about there. Raiders, but we mostly talk about Austin's adventures in Fallout 76. And we cover lore and the real history of Fallout and different stuff every week. So join us next time as we delve deeper into the games that you love from across the digital spectrum.
Boom. Pick it up.
I'm gonna let you intro. Okay. Normally I'm the one.
Okay.
Normally I'm the one.
All right.
You pick it up.
Are you ready?
I was driving the bus. It's your turn to drive this.
All right.
You drive this bus. Drive it all the way to the bus
stop.
Are you ready? And
I'm
when
ready.
You're at the bus stop, let the kids off the bus stop and tell them, thank you, children. Have a nice day. When you get home to your parents, give them a piece of chocolate that
I
just gave you.
I'm
it
ready.
Might be poison, and I might be wearing a mascot outfit.
I am ready.
Okay.